stories, heartaches and glories, stuff that happened to them, not allegories. And they tell them all to Joe down at the story hole.
Hey, Ian.
Hey, Joel.
Welcome. Welcome to the Story Hole intro. This is where we intro the Story Hole show.
This is how we intro the Story Hole show with our words.
Witty banter.
Oh, indeed.
Let's get on with the witty banter. What's in the news today?
Oh, what about those jokers in Washington? Am I right?
Oh, man, they're all the same.
Ah, I can't believe them. What have they done this time?
Stepped in it, that's what. Okay, we nailed that. What's
nailed
next?
With a wacky sound effect. Nice. How about some...
Michael Winslow, if you're listening to this pod...
You gotta get him.
You're still the king.
You are the king.
We want you.
We need him on the show.
Hashtag, get Michael Winslow on the Story Hole podcast.
Perfect hashtag. That is a perfect... Hashtag Joel. Like I was going to suggest something, but I was like, well, no, Joel nailed it first time.
Today on the show, we have a guy named Larry Schemmel.
Sure.
Larry Schemmel is, to me, the most unassuming, gentle rock and roll guitar player out there.
Sure.
He's a rock and roll dude, but he is one of the nicest, gentlest. I just love talking to Larry. I just love hanging out with Larry. We work together. You'll hear the history. But he's currently in a band called the Death Valley Girls. Great band. Doing well. We put a song of theirs on the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
I got some other snippets of songs. I felt like I needed to do those because we're going to talk about some bands in this show that a lot of people... Right. Judging by the fact that they're not even on Spotify, and I couldn't even find tracks on Spotify,
right?
I thought some audio cues might just help illuminate the conversation. So you got that treat to look forward to.
It's a good idea. It works, too.
A lot of people are going to be like, what in the hell is that? It's a genre of music that I personally love. I'm a huge garage rock fan. Larry's a huge garage rock fan. As you'll hear in these stories, there's a lot of people in that scene... who are kind of gruff. And but that's not Larry. That's not me either.
Damn.
Some good stories, some good concert experiences, because we're kind of in a phase here where I've talked to a lot of people about live music experiences. We're gonna keep that train rolling on this one.
Oh yeah.
As we always say, if you're new to the show, if you're a Death Valley Girls fan,
DVG. That found
DVG for sure.
Four, like the number four.
Okay, Ian. Like,
hashtag.
Hey, huddle up.
Yeah, what's up?
These Death Valley Girls fans are real, they're really hip.
Okay.
They're really cool, and I think this is going to be a huge turnoff for them. The whole DVG4L.
Okay. Okay, we won't do that.
We got to play it cool.
Like, tell me about how hip they are. Like, if they saw, like, someone looking at a house on Zillow and they thought it was a good house, what kind of thing would they say, Joel?
Well, they probably wouldn't say, add to cart, but I would.
Of course you would, because it's fucking awesome. All right, so they're not that kind of hip. Okay.
Death Valley Girls, it's a cool band. They got friggin' Iggy Pop in their video.
Sure.
Please tell... You know who Iggy Pop is.
Of course I know who fucking Iggy Pop is. Of course I fucking know. Come on.
What about Henry Rollins? Well, of course you know now, right?
He's
KCRU DJ. KCRW DJ.
Yeah, and he's in Heat. You know what I mean?
He was in Heat.
Yeah. That's why I know Henry Rollins.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah.
Is he in Heat?
Yeah, he plays like, I think it was one of his first roles. He plays like the bad guy, like the rich bad guy's muscle.
Oh, cool. You
know, he's like standing there with his arms. He's got like a tight black t-shirt on. He's got his arms folded. I don't think he speaks, by the way.
He's in The Chase also. He's a legend, though.
Sure.
This is a string of legends on the program. Not that Henry Rollins is on the program, but Larry the Legend.
Sure.
Larry is an unassuming legend.
Hashtag, nope.
I'm going to hashtag that shit.
Yeah.
Check out our back catalog if you like this episode. It's pretty good.
It's damn good.
A lot of funny stuff, but they're all good stories. So please check them out. Please subscribe. Please rate us. Please review us. All that shiz.
Mm.
Enjoy our talk with Larry. One thing I'd be remiss if I left out.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Patreon.
Indeed we do.
Patreon.com/thestoryholepodcast.
Boom.
We have exclusive content.
Indeed.
We have swag, other stuff. Check it out. Anything and everything helps keep the lights on around here. Good. We got a couple generous patrons.
We do.
We could use a whole lot more.
Hell yes.
Please check it out. Without further ado, let's rock and roll with Larry Schemmel.
Hashtag yes.
Hashtag an unassuming legend. Hashtag add to cart. How's it going, buddy?
Pretty good.
Let's see what we got back there. We got a Fear record, a Plasmatics poster, obviously. Anyone who can read.
That. Clash. Stuff in the room, in the bedroom. The lighting is...
Whoa, we're in Larry's bedroom, everybody.
Yeah.
You are Larry Schemmel.
Yes.
You are the guitar player in the Death Valley Girls.
Correct.
The Death Valley Girls, correct me if I'm wrong, the Death Valley Girls can count Henry Rollins and Iggy Pop as fans of your band.
Yes.
True or false?
I think Rollins, I'm not sure if he has played us or not. Iggy definitely has.
You don't even care about Henry. You already got Iggy.
Yeah, I got Iggy.
God, you're such a braggart, Larry. Just kidding. Okay, so I met you. I'm going to do a little background. Why not? Well, I didn't meet you. I saw you play in a band years before I met you. Well, that's, you know what? That's so weird. I came to LA in April of 99.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I started working at Amoeba October of 2001, shortly after 9/11.
Right.
When did you start there?
Okay. I came to LA in February of 97. And okay. I started at Amoeba.
Not before I did.
No, no. Maybe. It was. I do remember.
Before they opened or after they opened?
After they opened. And it was, I do remember the timeline was after 9/11.
I should say after we opened.
Yeah. After we opened.
Because I was there, man.
For the opening. Yeah. I remember, they'd been open for a while, and I was a, you know, I remember going there as a customer on opening day.
I remember I was working the back corner where all the punk wall LPs were. Right. I was on wall duty opening day. I was there with armed with my pole.
Yeah.
As we opened the doors. Holy moly, that was a crazy day.
That was a crazy day. Yeah.
Woo.
I had two baskets full of stuff that I bought.
Man, good for you.
Yeah.
And you started what, like later that year, a couple years?
Maybe about a year or so later. I got the connect because it was so hard to get a job there back then. You had to really have a connection or have serious credentials.
Yes, that's what I had. What I was gonna say is I saw you play before I knew you.
Okay.
Because you played in Seattle's The Gimmicks?
Seattle's The Gimmicks, Estrus Records recording artists.
Woo!
gimmicks. Yeah.
What was the gimmicks gimmick?
The gimmicks gimmick was there was no gimmick. And I asked the singer, Mark, when I joined the band, it's like, what? Like, why is the gimmick? It just didn't sound like a tough garage band name. It was like, like, why'd you name the band the gimmicks? And he's like, because we don't have any. Like,
I love it. No one ever really questioned it, to my knowledge.
No.
But I never thought about it that hard. But if you do think about it, it does sound more like a pop punk band.
I do have a prop here.
Oh, sick.
Look at that.
Oh, look at that. You got the back? Is there a young Larry on the
There's
back?
A young Larry. Is? This broody looking character. Look at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at these guys. Love it. That's prime 2000 garage. Right when that big wave of white.
Dude, that's limited edition.
Limited edition colored vinyl art by Art Chantry.
My hero.
Legendary artist. But that was the big wave of, that was the White Stripes and all that stuff.
You also, before that and after that, you're in the Flesh Eaters, correct?
Yeah, I was in the Flesh Eaters. When I first moved to LA in 97, like shortly... Mm-hmm. Very shortly after that, when I started to kind of meet people in the music scene, and I was working at a screen printing shop, and my buddy Jeff, who worked there, was playing in the Flesh Eaters, and he was like, hey, we're looking for a second guitar player. So I joined the Flesh Eaters, and I was in that band for a couple years. We did a record, played a lot of shows.
Yes, you were on one of their records.
Yeah.
And then in the aughts, you had the Midnight Movies. You've been in a ton of other bands. So anyway, how are you keeping afloat during the pandemic now that, because, I mean, when you, aside from music, you were working at Amoeba, correct?
Yeah, it was like part-time at Amoeba, but for the most part, the music thing was kind of making ends meet with that, and mostly because of touring, because we were just nonstop touring.
Obviously.
All right. The time, and that was bringing in some dough. So it was touring, merchandise, just keeping things going to keep money coming in. And then when I did have downtime, I would like take on shifts at Amoeba. When I was in Midnight Movies, it was the same thing, where I was able to like do music as the main gig, and then...
As a matter of fact, you told us all to fuck off.
I did,
you went
off
to be in the band.
I did, yeah. I was like, see you jokers and, later, and then...
And you came back to play it in-store, do you remember that? Do you remember when I put, like, 50 pictures of your face on the door to the green room?
Yeah, yeah, I remember it, and it stayed there for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
It stayed there forever, and... When I left and then I came back, the new people recognized me from, hey, you're the guy from the pictures on the door of the triangle room. So they already knew me from that.
Oh, yeah, the triangle room. I forgot the name of the room.
Yeah. Mm. So so basically what's going on now is I had to do the unemployment thing, self-employed dude, which took months.
I didn't want to get all bummer on it, but it just occurred to me as we're talking that like you had the double whammy of not being able to tour and then your extra little side gig also went kaput.
Yeah,
so
it's it sucks. So basically it's been like, I mean, the band has done a couple like virtual gigs, right? and some
and
special
put out a new record,
which was kind of a, like, at first it seemed like, oh, this is really bad. We're putting out a new record this year. This is gonna be really bad. But it actually kind of flipped into a good thing, because we were able to kind of take this year and concentrate on, well, let's make that our focus for the years, like the record release, promoting it, do we like special merchandise.
Right.
So we kind of rallied around that, being like, at least we have this to focus on, because if we didn't, it would be super duper depressing. So,
yeah, man.
Yeah.
So now it's like, hopefully, I know I am, like, hopefully people are like more willing, since they're not spending money on shows. Like, think how much you spend it going out to a show. Like, you spend $20 or whatever on the ticket, and then if you drink, you're easily spending another at least $20, probably much more. And so buy a record. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you haven't been buying records, like, fucking buy some records. And are you guys selling a lot of stuff directly?
Yeah. We have a merch shop. And as far as having the new record come out, we've been able to kind of do some special, like, merchandise. And this virtual, one of the virtual shows we did, our buddy who filmed it made like a limited edition VHS version of it.
Oh, that's cool.
And do like special packages with like posters and you know, sold test pressings and done a lot of special things that not only helped, like, you know, like make some money, but also it's the fans are, you know, it's kind of like special.
Right. It's not wasted time. You settle into this shitty situation and at least you can make music. I don't know.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It just makes you figure out different angles of instead of just being like, oh, I can't really do anything right now, so fuck it, I'm not going to play or do anything, this year sucks. And it just makes you look at it like, well, this is what I love to do, so I'm going to still do it regardless of if we can't play live right now. There's still other creative things to do, and being like an artist or whatever, like, I could make some new t-shirt designs and posters and just anything just to keep the creative stuff going.
Just don't sell your record collection, dude.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's also another, funny you say it, because another side hustle I have is an eBay store, like books, posters, magazines, collectibles. So not a lot of records, like every now and then. And what is weird right now is like, it is like a good time to be selling stuff online, because,
well, yeah, that's true, because people are buying shit.
Yeah, people are buying shit, they're bored, they're online. A lot of people do have, you know, some money coming in, and also buying a record, it makes you feel good if you're bummed out and depressed.
Yeah, I was gonna say retail therapy, baby.
Yeah. So you look online and you go, oh, look at that, there's a Gorey's record I don't have. And then you click the button and then you feel really good. And then you get your Gorey's record.
Yeah. So be nice also to your UPS guy. So anybody listening to this, if you're a Death Valley Girls fan, go to their, what's your main way of communicating with the world? Instagram?
Instagram is the main stuff. And you could find all the info for merch store and all that.
Go there.
Yeah.
Help these people out. Okay. So that leads me to why I'm doing all these calls with people. And that is, since we can't go to shows and we can't play shows, let's talk about shows.
All right.
let's reminisce.
Reminisce.
Now, I was going to also say, you've also played with Rocky Erickson, right?
Yes.
Or is it Sky Saxon? Or is it both?
It's Rocky, yeah.
Okay.
Rocky,
so you never played in the Seeds.
Never did play the Seeds, but that would have been awesome. So playing with Rocky was a trip, because it was Rocky Erickson. And
right. Give people an idea of, give a two-minute history of Rocky Erickson and the 13th Floor Elevators. Go.
All right. So Rocky Erickson, so 13th Floor Elevators, from Austin, Texas, started in like 66, and they were pretty much the first like psychedelic
garage band. Yeah,
this
they used a jug.
Yeah, so they had a big hit, You're Gonna Miss Me. and they put out three records, and then LSD and jail and a bunch of other shit happened, and they imploded, and that was that. But they were, after they kind of broke up, Rocky was kind of a acid casualty, and he ended up in the loony bin, and
which probably means he was predisposed to some mental health issues.
For sure.
Like, there's so many acid casualties of that era that probably were just mentally ill, and they blew their minds out on acid, and it
really
fucked them up.
Yeah, you could kind of look at a parallel with Rocky and Sid Barrett, where they're these brilliant people who then kind of went off the rails with the drugs and disappeared. And Rocky, he got help and kind of came out of that cloud, and did. Then he had his kind of second wave where he did a bunch of solo records. He was kind of like had this resurgence because he was kind of influential to the punk rockers too. There's actually that movie called You're Gonna Miss Me.
Yes,
about Rocky, which is tells the story. And then he had
Pause this, go check that out.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back. Watched You're Gonna Miss Me.
Yeah. So Rocky disappears again. And then I can't remember exactly when the third resurgence came, when he kind of reappeared.
Mid-late 90s, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, he kind of came back and was doing really well. And then from there, he kind of just went on and just kept touring and putting bands together. And so that's when Death Valley Girls met up. We actually saw him play a festival and talked to the guitar player after the gig, and he was a fan of Death Valley Girls, so we kind of connected and kept in touch. So we got asked to do the Rocky tour, and a few weeks later,
like opening
for Rocky, and the guitar player in Rocky's band, Eli Southard, he then asked me if I wanted to be the second guitar player in the band, because he said it would be cool because Rocky played a little bit, but they really needed the two guitars to make it work.
Right.
So I was just like, yes, I can do that. So we met them in Austin, Texas. We drove out and I had like 2 days of practice with the band, and we started this tour where it was like Death Valley Girls and Rocky, and I did double duty every night playing in both bands. And that went really great. And then not quite a year later, less than that, 6 months or something, we did another tour. And I played guitars with them again. And there was some one-off shows here and there. So there was a lot of Rocky activity of playing a lot of shows with that band.
Well, so did you think about a specific best, worst, or most memorable show that you wanted to tell me about? Or
with the Rocky Erickson band, the one that really sticks out was, I believe it was the end of the second tour we did with them, and the last show was in LA. It was at the Roxy Theater.
Ooh, that's famous.
Yeah, Roxy, which is right right next door to the
Rainbow Room.
So after Death Valley Girls plays, we go in the green room, hanging out, and someone says, "Hey, Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top is here, and he wants to see his old friend Rocky," because Billy and Rocky were old friends. Because in that scene, Billy had his own band, the Moving Sidewalks. Psychedelic garage band, and they would play with the Elevators, and like Billy looked up to Rocky, and they were buddies from back then. So, and then someone had this bright idea of like, "Hey Billy, why don't you join us on stage for some songs, maybe the encore?" And Billy's like, "All right, and we'll do a You're Gonna Miss Me." So we play the show, and then leave the stage, and then the encore for You're Gonna Miss Me, Billy Gibbons comes up there. We give him a guitar, and we all play the song. And I'm on stage and I'm just looking at Rocky and looking at Billy Gibbons and just being like, what the ass?
That's awesome.
What am I doing here? It was a trip. It was one of those like, oh my God, these guys are like legends. And I'm playing along. And it was like watching a movie or something. It was, really surreal.
And you're a fan of those old ZZ Top records, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I was a fan of the 80s shit, but I mean, the early records are undeniably great records.
Yeah, yeah. When I was a kid, I don't know if you guys have this thing called the Bookmobile.
Of course.
Oh, you did? Okay. I thought it was like an old-timey thing. Well, so in elementary school, the Bookmobile.
I'm old too, Larry.
Okay. The Bookmobile would come to the elementary school, and it was so exciting. Like, I don't know, every couple weeks or whenever when it would come. And our Bookmobile, they had records, vinyl records. Ooh. And instead of books, I would go straight to the records. And I remember vividly the records I checked out. Like I remember I checked out Kiss Alive, Alice Cooper's Greatest Hits, ZZ Top, Tres Hombres was another one. Yes. I just remember thinking like, these guys look cool. And yeah, so they were always kind of like one of those bands that I liked, and no matter how like cheesy they got in the 80s, it was always like ZZ Top.
I was gonna say, okay, so you stuck with it, you weren't like too cool for legs?
No, yeah, that was all. I was all good. I was on board. Yeah, on board for that. There was this one thing I just remembered about the Billy Gibbons, Rocky Erickson show, the closing scene from that night. I was on this after the shows out front hanging out with actually a couple Amoebite people. And Billy Gibbons is leaving the Roxy. So he pulls up in his car and he's sitting there. And I look over and it's one of those, what are those new cars that are
Tesla?
Not the Tesla, but they're almost like an egg.
Smart car.
The smart car.
It's like a... Oh, he gets into one of those.
He's in a smart car, and I look over and I was, oh, shit, it's Billy. And he's in one of these tiny little smart car eggs. Uh-huh. And, and then he drives off. And it was just so bizarre because it was like, that's the, you know, the ZZ Top Eliminator car. That hot rod was so cool. And here he is in a smart car. So, I mean,
hey, he cares. Billy cares.
He cares
about the environment.
Yeah.
So props to you, Billy.
Yeah, he cares.
Thank you, Larry. That's a good story. I like that story.
Thank you.
Do you have a worst? Do you have a quick worst show you ever played?
Okay. There was a few, especially when I was back in the drinking days. There were some real rough ones, but I was thinking about two shows when we actually got stuff thrown at us.
Uh-huh.
So one of them was Death Valley Girls. We played, this is early on in the band, we played this thing called Babes Ride Out in the Desert, Joshua Tree.
Okay.
Babes Ride Out.
To be clear, this is not during your drinking period.
This is sober.
Ages after.
Sober days. So Babes Ride Out is an all women like biker kind of festival. Okay. and they're sort of like a club that's all like women who ride and stuff like that, and they do the Babes Ride Out festival, and they do this thing where they have bands play, but the bands are usually all girl bands.
Right.
So like I guess
100%
yeah girl bands. So they're assuming, you know, Death Valley Girls were an all-girl band. They hired us to come out, and I think
are you the only fellow in the band?
Only fellow in the band. There's been a fellow, couple fellows.
Yeah, I thought there was another guy.
Yeah,
at one point at least. Okay,
yeah. So we played this thing.
Do I sense a bosom buddies situation going on?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I should have done, because we're playing this thing. It's outside. It's and apparently, like, the promoter knew, like, there's a dude in the band. There was no big deal.
Right.
But some of the ladies there took offense to a dude being at this all-girl festival. Right. So when we're playing, I was yelled at and things were thrown at me.
Do you remember any specific things yelled at you? Probably not. You probably didn't even make anything out.
Yeah, it was just like, get him out of here, you know, stuff like that. Like, she was like, sorry. Okay, that's like, so I got a little, you know, went, lock him up.
I always find myself laughing hysterically at some really painful things people are telling me.
Yeah.
This thing.
Go
ahead.
And so the other band playing was our friends LA Witch, who are all girls. But I do remember the drummer for the band.
That's what it's supposed to be, Larry.
Yeah, I know. Didn't follow the rules. So the drummer for LA Witch got up and she's like, leave him alone, like stood up for me and stuff. And we played you got through the set and it was fine, but I was a little shooken up. And I guess I kind of got a little taste of, you know, what it's like to be, just
oppressed.
Oppressed, a little oppression.
You're oppressed.
I was oppressed. So that stinks.
Well, I'd say that's good for a person.
It's good. Yeah. It was like,
builds
wow,
character.
That, yeah. It was like, okay, that's no fun. But
and that's when you'd left the KKK, right, Larry?
Yeah. Yeah. Left the Proud Boys after that. I was like, boy, I get it now. The other time, okay, going back to one of my first bands, Kill Sybil from Seattle.
I wasn't going to bring your sister up, but since you brought up Kill Sybil. Yeah.
The drummer.
Your sister Patty Schemmel.
Patty Schemmel, drummer of...
of Hit So Hard fame.
Hit So Hard and the band Hole. Courtney yeah. Loves Hole.
Y'all were in a band together.
So we
probably
were in
a few,
called,
but...
Yeah. We're in a band called mm-hmm. Sybil together, and Patty was the drummer. And...
Kill Sybil, right?
Kill Sybil, yeah. Well, we put out a right. single called Sybil.
And, oh, okay.
And then it got a good review in this major magazine called Alternative Press. Mm-hmm. And the manager of a R&B singer named Sybil they called our little tiny indie label Empty Records and said,
I like Empty Records.
Yeah. Yeah. They put out some good
Sicko.
Yeah. Sicko. They put out some Mummy stuff. So
yeah, they did, didn't they?
Yeah. We got a call from the manager, from Sybil's manager, and she's cease and desist. You can't call your band name that. So then they're like, okay, well, what do we do? And then, well, so as a joke, it was like, well, how do we, if we could keep the band name Sybil, if we killed Sybil, ha, 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 ha. So we changed the band name to Kill Sybil.
Nice.
And then that was the band for the rest of it. And so Patty actually left the band because she got the whole gig. So mm-hmm. then we got a dude in the band to play drums. And actually had a couple dudes. So this guy, Jeff, played drums. And we're like, okay, we put out a single. We go on tour. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. Just go on tour. We're going to L.A. We're going to hit the big time. And so the gig we play in San Francisco is at this place called the Chameleon Club. Mm-hmm. And it was with two bands we really loved. So we're super excited. Phantom Surfers.
Yes.
And the A-Bones.
Well, it's police in a big, big house. Poor boy does the same. My boy lives in a county jail, but I love him just the same. Cause he's my lovey-dovey-dovey.
So we were just like, oh shit, this is awesome. What a great show. Our first tour, one single. So no one really knew who we were. So we're just some local band from Seattle. And this is 1992. This is like right. the height of like, you know, we're like, shows we would play on flyers, it would say Sybil Sub Pop band, Seattle grunge band. Like, we weren't even on Sub Pop. It was just like, if you were from Seattle at the time, it was like some big deal or something.
Flyers would say you were on Sub Pop?
Yeah.
Sometimes?
But we, yeah. Which was not true. It was just sort of like they would just slap that on there because it was like, yeah, it's Seattle grunge bands, whatever.
Whatever gets butts in the seats.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
okay, go ahead.
In San Francisco, the scene of, because like the Mummies, those guys were from San Mateo, very close to Frisco. And that garage scene of that time, and that was very like a tight knit and very like a judgmental scene. Like, it was garage.
Territorial, like, maybe.
Territorial, very pure, very like, you know, that whole like budget rock attitude, man. So any of this like indie rock stuff or any of that other stuff was just like drivel, bunch of like.
Right.
Yeah. So I remember Phantom Surfer Mel, right? Okay.
Yeah.
I remember at that show, somebody brought up the Germs, and Mel had seen them back in the day, and he was like, Germs suck. Darby's a loser. They were never good anyway. And it's like, so that
everyone has their opinions.
Yeah, everyone has. Okay, all right. And but that attitude kind of that kind of was the vibe of the evening. Yeah. So Sybil, we were like kind of more like, I mean, we all love garage rock and the Mummies and all that stuff, but we also, you know, side note, the guitar player in Sybil dated Trent Ruane. I almost said Trent Reznor. Trent Ruane, who was the Mummy, the head Mummy.
Right.
So
Mummy.
They were all great guys. Like, they actually stayed at my house. And when I saw the Mummies play at the Burger Boogaloo a couple years back, ran into with talk to the Mummies. They remembered, like, yeah, you're from that band. We stayed at your house. Like, you know, cool guys.
Nice.
Okay, so going back to 1990.
But they were not there this night.
They were not there this night.
They were playing.
They could have helped us this night because they were our
friends. Only the Mean Phantom Surfers were there.
Yeah, Mean Phantom Surfers and the Friendly A-Bones. So Sybil comes out, and so we're the Seattle band playing this sort of like noisy indie rock that, you know, it sounded more like Sonic Youth, Dinosaur kind of thing. But still like lo-fi and crappy, but not that, not the type of lo-fi garage rock. So, and we were playing, and the fans who are there did not, they're not having it.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I remember that they threw like beer cups and just whatever they could get. We would get like pelted with garbage. So, and I remember just standing there being like, wow, this is like, I kind of was like, kind of take it all in because I've heard of this happening to bands, or maybe seeing the Blues Brothers.
Right.
We didn't have the chicken wire to save us from getting any. Right. Luckily, there was no beer bottles thrown, but we had enough like kind of hate thrown at us and crap. And I was playing, I had a vintage Fender Jaguar. super nice 64 Sunburst Jaguar. And the reason I got it was it was before like Nirvana, like Kurt Cobain had. Like I got it because it was a specific like true like garage surf kind of guitar.
Right.
And I knew the guy from Spaceman 3 also played it. So I was like, this is a cool guitar. And at the time I got it for like $450. It was back when they were Fenders and Jaguars were like, you could find them for super cheap. So, we played, got all the shit thrown at us, you know, boo. So that, so we play the whole set and everything. And we, get off stage and then the Phantom Surfers come up and Mel has they have Jazz Masters and Jaguars. And, so Mel says in the microphone, I'm gonna, we'll show you what Jaguars are supposed to sound like. And then they play the thing. And I'm like, God, what a jerk. And then we get backstage and Billy Miller and Miriam are back there. And Billy's like, it's like, it's cool, man. Sorry, the, you know, those kids didn't like you. Yeah, that sucks, but fuck them. Like, I really enjoyed the show. Billy was super cool.
Oh,
and,
awesome.
You know, and he was like a dude who'd been around and he wasn't like Mr., you know, he liked all sorts of music. So that was like cool.
So it was bad, but with a silver lining.
Yeah. It was like, if Billy wouldn't have said that, I just would have been so bummed. But to have him, like Mr. Norton Records, like say that, and was kind of like cool because I, yeah, like I was never like Mr. Garage Purist. It's got to be like, I liked so much music that it's like, how could you like, what, you know?
That was also popular. I mean, I'm not going to say he was posturing because like, I mean, the Phantom Surfers were fine, but I'm sure you weren't like, oh no, the Phantom Surfers don't like us.
Yeah.
It's just more like an asshole thing to say.
Yeah. And it was sort of like a thing where it was like the Phantom Surfers and the Mummies and those guys, it was sort of like their shtick where they had to hate, you know, it's like this.
It's like the Tim Warren thing.
Yeah, Tim Warren back from the grave attitude where everything sucks. And I love like that attitude and that thing is so, it's so great because
it's all about being snotty.
Yeah, it's all about being snotty. I mean,
not so great when it's aimed at you though, huh, Larry?
So that night sucked, but it really stuck in my memory because it was a really shitty, you know, feeling to be like, wow, this really, you know, these people really hate us. But then to have Billy make it all cool. And then it kind of, yeah, and it kind of made me feel like, yeah, I don't have to be like all precious about fucking the music. I, you know, the scene or like a,
right.
You could like all sorts of music and it's just, there's so much to fucking like. So
You're one of the few people that I know that I like spent a good deal of time with that are into the garage rock scene that like I wouldn't define you by it at all.
Yeah. Cool.
And you played on Estra, so.
Yeah.
So there.
Yes.
All right, Larry. This has been awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. And yeah.
Go to at Death. Is it at Death Valley Girls?
Well, yeah, Instagram. Like,
or
I don't know how
the
just if you type in Death Valley Girls on Instagram.
Yeah, just find the Death Valley Girls on Instagram.
It's on there, and yeah.
Don't make Larry say at. Larry's not an at guy. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Joel. Bye.
Bye, ladies and gentlemen, the Death Valley Girls. Thanks for listening. The Story Hole is produced by Joel Huggins and Ian Golding. If you like what you've heard, please go ahead and subscribe. And if you would be so kind as to give us a nice 5-star rating and a kind review on the podcast outlet of your choice, we'd be most appreciative. Special thanks to Nick Shoulders for the great music. Check him out at nickshoulders.bandcamp.com. For more, go to thestoryhole.com, and you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thanks for listening. Bye.